Support for Talking Art on WVIK comes from the people at Quad City Bank and Trust, helping the local community with their banking and financial needs for more than 20 years. Information is at qcbt.com. Support also comes from the estate of Margaret Skinner, a longtime friend of WVIK and lover of the arts.
This is Carolyn Martin, and I'm talking art today with Sally Gerke, a potter and muralist from Bettendorf, who will be displaying her work at the upcoming Riverzounce Festival this weekend. Welcome, Sally.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. You work with three major types of clay: earthenware, stoneware, and porcelain. How do these materials vary from one another?
Well, first of all, it's kind of interesting because when I start, I think about, well, my studio, the cleanup is major between these three clay bodies. And so I try and start with stoneware, which is not as messy. And then I move to earthenware, which is red terracotta, and that's very messy. And then I clean up the whole area and go to porcelain, which is a white, translucent, high-fired clay body. And, you know, you really do not want any of these other imperfections in your porcelain clay. So that's how I work. And I move from one clay body. It's like a kind of like a weekly sort of thing. I do stoneware for a while, and then, you know, when I get kind of tired of that, then I move to red earthenware, which is the colorful, and that's kind of like a relief for me, and it's very fluid, and you can mold it very easily and do a lot of hand building. And then I clean it all up and go to pure white.
Uh-huh. And the clay varies from one form to the other in terms of the mineral content and then other ingredients within the clay.
And the temperature. And so I'm interested. The first time I even touched clay, it was with stoneware. And so I was influenced when I was only 18 in high school. And I was just learning how to handle the material. And Carl Christensen, who taught at the Davenport Art Museum at the old location up on the hill, he was very instrumental in teaching lots of students around. A lot of people in the Quad Cities have taken classes, mostly the older generation, because he's since passed away. And while I was taking lessons from him, it was a return for me making clay for him, and then he was showing me how to throw on the wheel.
Oh, that's quite a pairing, really. And you were, in essence, an apprentice for him.
That's correct. I didn't even really realize what an apprentice could be. And many potters around the United States and the world have apprentice, and they're actually pretty hard to get in to be an apprentice for some people that are real prominent artist, but he was so great. He was really fun and everyone enjoyed him. And so I would just spend a lot of time over there helping him. And never did I realize it was going to be anything that I went into, but
but life unfolds in sometimes mysterious ways and ways that we don't expect.
That's right.
Yeah. So besides the earthenware, stoneware, porcelain, and again they vary by clay, by the temperatures it used to.
That's correct.
To fire these in, and the stoneware is more for like cooking and baking.
You can use it. You know, people use it for sculpture, and I make my own clay. I also purchase clay. But I make my own clay because when I was becoming interested, I studied with Ruth Duckworth, who's in Chicago, and she had this clay body that was perfect for exterior buildings, and it was great for weather issues and all sorts of temperature changes, especially in the Midwest. So little did I know that she was like just this amazing person. I was just interested in learning from her because I liked the idea that she was doing murals. And at that time, I was raising three children, and I thought this was a way that I could use my skills in the schools. And so I have quite a few murals around town in schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've had a long career. You've been making pottery since the 70s, I suppose we should say. And over that time, your work has evolved. And besides these your pottery where they're forms that are very utilitarian, you have created quite a few large scale ceramic murals for schools, mm-hmm. and then you've had some sculptural installations as well.
That's right. And it just keeps me interested. So then when I got a little tired of this temperature that we fire stoneware to, was, to answer your question, is a high-fired stoneware clay that is fired to 2,300 degrees, and it takes quite a while to fire your pieces. Mm-hmm. And then earthenware is fired quite a bit lower, and it's very porous.
So how do you make it impervious to liquids then? Is that what the glaze does, or how does
that
work?
There's very, very different ways you can do it. Glazes essentially are make things that are, your fluid will not be invading the clay body, but what I do is I use this terra sigillata, and it's type of clay base, and it's like a waxy kind of surface. And that's what I use for the bottom of all my terracotta maialica pieces.
Mm-hmm. So, and you'd mentioned maialica. That's a separate type of pottery. What is that exactly?
Well, it's used on earthenware. So you'd see it all. You'd see it in Italy, and you'd see it in France, and in Mexico, and actually you can dig your own clays. So earthenware is like when I was in Arizona at an artist in residence, I actually dug my own clay and brought it home and fired it, and it was like red terracotta.
That sounds beautiful.
Well, it had a lot of impurities in it, but still it was fun to do. And there's many potters that dig their own clay, and they would prefer the natural colors. Mm-hmm. And
I myself prefer those kind of rustic, earthy tones. But this maialica is quite different because it's covered with a white glaze, so it's just very distinct.
And maialica basically is just a technique that you use for glazing. It's a glazing technique, and it's a tin glaze. It has tin in it, and it's a white opaque surface that you put onto the earthenware, and then you use your colorants and your oxides to create the colors.
Mm-hmm. And you had said to me earlier that that you're really drawn to this now because you paint on top of it. It's like painting a watercolor, in essence, on your clay pieces.
And that brings me, that's when I go. And when I am part of these artisan residencies, I, can't obviously take a 50-pound box of clay or lots of clay into these cabins where they, some of them are historical cabins in these national parks.
And we should say the artisan, you've done quite a few of these artisan residency programs, and they have been primarily through national parks in the United States.
Yes, and the national parks, they have, I think there's like 22 different parks around the United States that offer artisan residency programs. And it's not only for people that are visual artists. You could be a writer, and you can be a musician, and so you can apply. You could be a yoga instructor and apply. It just depends on the jury what they're looking for at that time.
Mm-hmm. And you were in, I think, Aspen, Colorado, you said, when you learned this. And was that a residency situation, or was that that was just a workshop?
Mm-hmm. There's an art center called Anderson Ranch, and it's in right outside of Aspen, where my youngest daughter teaches school. So I thought, well, this would be fun. I'd go and teach, while she's there, so I could see her, and at the same time, I'd be part of this art center. And that's what I've taught there about I don't know, I think 5 or 6 summers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With children, which is nice because I enjoy teaching children.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love the surfaces of your pieces. They're often embellished in a variety of ways, and they're very textural. So how do you create an interesting surface appearance?
Well, actually, that's what part of my artist statements, if you read some of my artist statements, it's interesting because I am very influenced by nature and my natural surroundings, and my studio is in a natural surrounding. So I actually get ideas through my imagination, and through the internet is a wonderful thing for artists too. I look at a lot of people, a lot of their work, other ceramicists, and I keep up with what they're doing and people that I've taken workshops with and things. I'm kind of like, I am self-taught, so I read a bunch, but now, I use the internet as a tool too. And all my texture is inspired from experience and traveling. And one, the purpose for me to go on an artist in residence is to get new ideas. And
yeah, well, that sounds that's really perfect. There are these essential elements, of nature that are all part of working with clay. Mm-hmm. The earth, the water, air. So and clearly where you work itself is surrounded by nature. But let's talk about that, because you have this absolutely amazing, very unique studio, to say the least.
It's a pretty different studio. When I was first realizing that I was needing a bigger space, I used to work in this teeny little closet area in our basement when the kids were growing up, and I was teaching as a substitute in the schools, and at night after the kids would be asleep, then I'd spend a lot of time in this little room. And finally, things just started growing and growing, and I was doing getting more orders and getting into these murals. And so finally I decided, you know what, I'm just going to save up so that I can have a whole full studio. And then I researched it. Very expensive to build something.
A freestanding studio.
A freestanding, mm-hmm. Beautiful, like I had seen all over the United States, really great studios. But I decided, well, I'm going to figure this out. And I was in Colorado teaching, and someone had a yurt. It's a Mongolian shelter. It's kind of like a canvas circular building. And they were using it as their studio. And so I came home and researched and figured out how we could order
a yurt.
Mm-hmm. And so we built a platform in our ravine behind our house. And it's a 24-foot diameter yurt. And it's got a deck around it. And it's wonderful. Every day I go out there, I'm thanking my lucky stars I have this yurt to work in. So there hasn't ever been a day where I felt like, it's kind of like a relief to go out there. Mm-hmm. You're removed and you're just going to work on anything that you would really like to work on, whether it be watercolors, lino cuts, and then, of course, my clay.
For people who might like to see your yurt in person, you will be having an open house sometime later this fall, possibly in October?
Yeah, we haven't set a date yet, but I usually do. I've just started doing these in the last 2 years and having people come to my yurt and see how I work and view some work. And then my partner, who I've worked with for 30 years, he has his work and his forms in my, in our area. It probably, he'll be upset. He doesn't like it in the garage, I don't think, but he sets up outside if it's a beautiful day. And then in conjunction with another potter in town, she has a studio in a barn, and usually we do it all together, and so people can go back and forth, and we have food and wine and drinks and things. It's fun.
Yeah, so that'll be on your Facebook page, possibly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll try to provide a link for that. And you'd mentioned your partner. I guess instead of a partner in crime, it's a partner in clay. This is someone that you just have an artistic relationship and have worked with for many years and share a kiln with.
We used to have a shop, too, on Harrison Street together. And his name is Jim Kronk. Mm-hmm. And he is also at all these art fairs at Beaux-Arts and Riversance, and he'll be at Riversance. And, I mean, there's a number of potters that I've been, that I've known forever that also will be at Riversance. And one lives out on the prairie, and he brings his work in. And so it's pretty fun. It's because we're all in our studios working alone mostly all the time. So when we go to these art fairs, it's a fun thing for us because we get to see each other and look at each other's work. And
yeah. Well, let's actually talk about the upcoming Riversance Festival of Fine Arts. And that's organized by Midcoast Fine Arts. And it really has become the premier fine arts festival in the Quad Cities. How would you describe it for someone who perhaps hasn't gone there before?
Well, when I'm at other venues, people ask me about fairs, and Beaux-Arts and Riversance are both great fairs, and so I've done these forever, for 30 years or so. So, I mean, naturally, I love the Figge Art Gallery because my husband is very involved there, and we've all grown up with the Davenport Art Museum. So I'm not going to be doing Beaux-Arts just because of a different thing I have to do. And then Riversance is a fun fair. It's right on the bluff overlooking the Mississippi. It's in East Davenport. And it was started by artists who actually wanted to start their own art fair. And so I think it's in there. The 30th year?
31st is what their website said. So that's just
so that's
fantastic.
How many I've missed a couple because of weddings and other family things. But it's really fun to do because they have music and food. And if you're lucky, it's a great day out. And
right.
We've been there with tents set up behind with our kids shivering in the snow. So you never know what type of weather you're going to get.
And that's coming up this coming weekend, Saturday, September 15th and 16th. I'm going to kind of circle back so people have a better idea, again, of what you do besides your functional pieces. You've done quite a few mural installations, and the schools really have benefited from that. Your most spectacular one is at Neil Armstrong School in Bettendorf.
That's one of my favorites. I actually like every one of them. They all have a different type of feel to them. And when my first mural was in my an office, and I was pregnant with my oldest daughter in 1980 or something. I don't know when it was, 1980. I can't remember, but yeah, that'd be right. And we installed that ourselves, my husband and I was just an experimental type of work. And then, you know, I started getting commissions to do these with students, which was just perfect because that's what I wanted to do, is work with kids. And so it went from Mark Twain School, which is one, and Armstrong was the amazing one, Armstrong School, because they actually created a space, a circular space surface for me to work with students to put this mural up. And it was so much fun. But it took me about 6 months, and they were really fun to work with, all the teachers and the staff.
And this is a large circular, like, inset around a skylight, so you look up and see it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think it's 65 square feet, or 65 feet around, 265 square feet. It's big.
So massive.
It's huge.
Uh-huh. And that's in Bettendorf, but in Davenport, you did a mural at McKinley, and then also across the river in Moline, so at Francis Willard Elementary.
Oh, that was so interesting. That was fun because the art teacher there asked me to just come and work with the kids and show them how to do, they were going to each do their individual face on tiles, and then we were going to put these tiles up so it'd be a whole collage of the school faces. And the first day I went in there, these kids, they were from all over the place, and I think they were from 19 different countries. And so they were, you know, we had people interpreting. Some of them could barely speak English, which I thought was so great. It was really a diverse situation, and it was fun teaching there and putting up the mural, and the kids really appreciated
It all sounds so much fun, and, you know, making your clay and working in the yurt and all these collaborative
it's a
projects.
Lot of work.
It does. It sounds very magical when you're hearing about it, but I know that it actually is quite hard work. And tell us about firing your large kiln, how long it takes, and what that entire process is like, because this does involve quite a lot of sweat and hard work.
Well, my partner, Jim Kronk, we have a kiln that's in his family, an outbuilding in his family lot over by North Park. And the kiln is, actually, we can stand in it almost. It's a downdraft kiln. And if you're a potter, you know what that means. And we built it with brick, soft brick, and it's actually pretty huge, so it takes us a long time to make enough pots to fill it. And we fire about once every 2 months. So what it entails is glazing all the pieces that we fired, and they've already been fired in electric kilns before, and then we get it all over there, we glaze it in all the various glazes that we've made, which is a lot of work. And then we've tested the glazes to see, because you don't want to glaze your whole body of work and then have it be a dud, you know.
So you have these smaller test kilns just for that purpose.
Well, some of us have kilns that are in our houses that we test glazes that we've formulated or we've used from books or different recipes. And so then this firing starts around 2 a.m. and one of us has to start it and turn it up every hour and look inside the kiln and look at the atmosphere, which is very important, through the spy holes after we've bricked it up. And
wait, so there's these little holes, these like little, we call them spy holes.
Yeah.
And you peek inside and you can tell what can you tell?
Well, it's amazing. First, you don't see anything but black. Then, as the temperature rises, as you're turning up your kiln, the gas and the air, you're manually adjusting these in this kiln. And as you're looking through the spy hole, you see a dull color, which actually is, a certain temperature. So you know, a lot of potters around, they fire just by looking in the kiln. So, but we have these cones that bend at certain temperatures. So they're these little ceramic. Look like little sticks.
You
or
said
pencils.
Cones. Mm-hmm. And they're made of the same material as
temperature.
As what you're firing.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. As the clay body that you're hoping to fire to, the temperature that you want to fire to, because these tip when you reach 1800 degrees, they tip at 2300, which is the temperature we fire our kiln to.
Just to go back again, you look through a spy hole, you look at these cones. When they start to tip, then you can tell you're at the correct temperature, so you have a more clear idea that you are firing your larger
temperature
pieces correctly. Huh.
But then there's all other components to this. I mean, if you're firing for an electric kiln and you go to 2300 degrees, your clay body looks completely different. It looks like if you were looking around the art fair at Riversons, you'd see how people's work looks different. Well, it's different ways of firing. So the way we fire our kiln is a reduction fire, and we starve the kiln of oxygen at a certain point in the firing, and then you know, we work with all sorts of atmospheres in the kiln to get what we're looking for.
Well, it sounds like there's a huge potential for error, you know, between judging the correct temperature of the kiln and then deciding how long things should remain inside.
Yeah.
And you've had to throw out some things.
It's pretty much of a science. Oh, yeah. Everybody, when you open up the kiln, it's so fun. It's like Christmas, and you see all sorts of things that you thought were going to be trashy, and they're unbelievably beautiful. So you never know what the... That's what the magic is with our kiln.
And you can learn from your mistakes, too, in a way.
That's mistakes are the best way, even though it's a heartbreak. But
Now, besides the upcoming Riverzance Festival, people can also view your work in some other local places.
That's right.
Uh-huh. So you sell, and I know you prefer in a way, the festivals. And some of those are here. Some are in Muscatine or in Iowa City. Mm-hmm. But then you also sell at some businesses, too.
That's correct. I sell in LeClaire at Artworks. I sell at Quad City Arts. And I've had some shows with them, with Quad City Arts. And they've been great. They've showed my work forever. And it's on display there. And let's see, where else? Once in a while, I have pieces in a car in Iowa City, and depending on the shows, they're
showing. A car. Now, that's AKAR.
That's right.
That's a really beautiful, very modern design store in downtown Iowa City that does feature a lot of different sculptors and ceramic artists.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. If you're out and about in Iowa City, you should go in there because... the work is from all over the United States, and its quality, these potters are very prominent, and they're potters that I would look for, people that I would love to study with. So I look at the work in there, and then I think, oh, well, gosh, she's teaching at there's a number of art centers around the United States that you can go and take classes, and it's really, that's where people get their information, and so it's interesting.
Yeah, it really sounds like it's been a lifelong learning process. And
it's,
you know,
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, and the story behind how you became a potter is really interesting. And, you know, sometimes it starts with pivotal people in our lives who shaped and influenced us. And you'd mentioned before Carl Christensen, but when you were even younger, you really were influenced by a woman, Barbara Priester.
That's correct. She was just in our neighborhood, and our families were all friends, so you just never know who's going to influence you. And we'd go over and have picnics and things, and she was potter, so she also was a printmaker and an elderly woman, in she was still working all the way up to...
Yeah. Well, I love the idea that you were self-taught, that you learned from all these different people. When you went to college, you actually were not an art major, but you continued to take ceramics classes at night and then really continued your education, reading on your own. It is really impressive what you can do.
If you have the interest in anything that you've brought you, like, going, wow, when you're just checking out different shows or television or whatever. I mean, if you think you can do something, you can do it. I mean, it's just amazing what you can do.
Mm-hmm. What brings you the biggest joy in your work?
It's just so much fun. I'm very passionate about clay. And every time I sit down and work with clay, it's not really like a chore for me. I enjoy every minute. And there's always something new you can learn, which that's probably why I'm so interested in it and all the different clay bodies, because I feel like I've never, ever really, I wouldn't say I'm advanced in any of it, but people would say, oh my gosh, you know, but there's always something that I can use to grow with.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, Sally Gierke, thank you so much for talking today.
Okay, well, thanks you so much for having me.
Of course. And the Riverzance Festival of Fine Arts is being held this coming weekend, Saturday, September 15th, from 10 to 5.
Come on by.
Absolutely. And on Sunday, September 16th, from 10 to 4 at Lindsay Park in the Village of East Davenport, you will find over 90 top regional artists there. So check out the art, food, wine tasting, and live music, and stop by Sally Gerke's tent to say hello.
Please do. It'd be fun to meet you.
This has been Carolyn Martin, talking art in the Quad Cities for WVIK. Our theme music is provided by a Quad City legend, the late Ellis Kell.